Thursday, and that means Climate Thursday. And we welcome into the studio a regular Climate Thursday guest from Duke's Nicholas Institute. It's Ashley Ward. Ashley, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. Glad to have you in studio. What have you been up to for the past 2 weeks?
I wrote an op-ed.
That's right. We'll definitely get into that in just a minute for sure.
Yep. And also have a report that just came out today. Been working on state hazard mitigation plans and their incorporation of heat into their state hazard mitigation plans. And FEMA released new guidelines yesterday. So lots of exciting things happening in my world.
That's right. And I feel like when last we spoke, there was a conversation about people not being ready to talk about heat as an issue because it was still like in cool weather season. But apparently we've gotten to the point now where they'll accept that content.
89 degrees on April 19th gets people talking.
Yeah, that's today's not ideal. It's like one of those things where it's like, well, it's not raining, it's sunny, but it's also like a midsummer day.
I know,
in April.
Right, yes.
So, yeah. So your op-ed, current heat warning systems are woefully inadequate in an age of climate change. And we were talking about this when you first came in a little bit ago about how there's all these warning systems for weather-related things that are like, they might happen, and the heat is definitely going to happen, and we don't have a real system for that. So how did we get here? What do we do about it?
Yeah. So first, I should say, love the National Weather Service. Huge fan. but currently, the way heat is treated with respect to warnings is that the warnings are issued based on the probability or the magnitude of the event. So this is a heat event that falls within the 98th percentile of all heat events in this area. The challenge is that most health outcomes associated with heat occur at temperatures much lower than what would normally trigger a warning. But here's the real challenge for the National Weather Service. So I want to be sympathetic to them. What do you do in the summer when you get a thunderstorm warning? Are you like most of us and you totally ignore it?
Yeah.
So overwarning is a real challenge that the National Weather Service is concerned about with this issue. Is, yes, it's hot every day here, right? And so how do you draw the line between overwarning so that people ignore the warning, which is a real thing, and properly warning people about when to act and how to protect themselves? And so because of that challenge, I think that's why we need a special warning system specifically designated for heat that not only captures different people being vulnerable at different thresholds. So like if you're a person that's over 65 and diabetic, you're going to be vulnerable at one temperature. If you're a pregnant mom, at another temperature. If you're a roofer, another temperature. If you're a student athlete, another temperature. So we need to have, you know, a warning system that can actually issue warnings based on different categories of vulnerability. And we need one that is more of a notification system, I would say, that helps people understand how they can act to protect themselves. And it can't be go to air conditioning. Can I just say that I have a pet peeve, and that is air conditioning is wonderful, and I think we should all go to air conditioning. But there's a reality that a lot of people do not have air conditioning or they can't afford to run their air conditioner. So to say to a farm worker, for example, that lives in farm worker housing, most of which is non-air conditioned, go to air conditioning when you're overheated. It's like, oh, wow, if somebody had just told me that all I needed was air conditioning would solve my problem.
Right. It's like you know, there's a drought in that country. I don't know why they don't just water everything there.
Yes, right. That's exactly such a good analogy. It's exactly the same thing. So it's like we need to be talking to people about non-air conditioning interventions, and there are many of them, and the science is robust on their effectiveness. So it's about, you know, notifying people when they're at risk and helping them understand how to protect themselves. And right now, that system does not exist.
It is Climate Thursday. We're visiting with Ashley Ward. And to your point, this is like an ongoing issue with heat-related weather problems. It's not spectacular. And I use spectacular in the sense of, like, it is not creating a spectacle.
Right.
Like, when a thunderstorm warning goes off, and I remember when I was a kid, like the tornado sirens would go off and like half the neighborhood's out on their porch looking around.
There's a tornado. I should go outside quick.
I want to see this. Should we take action? If I see a funnel cloud, I'm going to move. But the same with snow. Like people get excited about snow because it's fun, but it's also like the visual aspect of it and the gear up for it. And, you know, when we say like, oh, it's going to be record setting high temperatures in 2 days, there's no like, oh, I can't wait to see what that looks like.
That is so true. It's really a challenge. I say all the time, the view out my window does not change, whether it's 85 degrees or 105 degrees. And that is, in fact, one of the problems with helping people understand risk around heat. Also a problem is when a lot of times when you see newspapers or magazines or online, you know, media talk about an upcoming heat wave, they have photos of like children playing in sprinklers and beachgoers laying on the beach. I'm like, that you would never think of doing something like that for like a hurricane that was coming. So those images that we've given to people undersell basically the risk. It gives a misrepresentation of the risk of heat. And so I would like to see sort of all across the board, just we rethinking about how we talk about heat, when we talk about it.
How does that start? How does that conversation start in a way that actually, you know, changes a message across all platforms?
Yeah, and that's such a good, I think it's a challenging question. So we know that we've been able, you know, think about tobacco, for example, how we shifted from, I mean, we are here in this area, which was the primary tobacco manufacturing region in the world, actually, for a while there, especially around Durham. And so how did we then shift to where cigarette smoking is totally fine to where it's really bad, right? So a lot of it, there has to be integrated across all levels, from federal government to state to local, but also media, and we need to get marketing firms involved and talking about how we talk about that risk. Risk is extremely hard for people to understand. And so we need to be thoughtful, strategic about how we do it, and it has to be all-encompassing.
We're visiting with Ashley Ward from Duke's Nicholas Institute for Climate Thursday, and we've been talking mostly about this op-ed about heat warning systems being, your words, woefully inadequate.
Actually, you know,
That's a headline, so that's an editor's words, isn't
that's
it?
That's an editor's word. Right. I'm actually really terrible at coming up with titles, and so a lot of the editors title my op-eds.
That's right. And that is pretty standard practice, I think. But the point remains that we not only are the warning systems inadequate, but the conversation around heat in general as a risk is inadequate. I do want to change topics a little bit because we're on the Thursday just prior to Earth Day.
Yes.
And it seems like that should be a topic of conversation on Climate Thursday. You told me that you have thoughts on Earth Day, and I am eager to hear them.
Yeah. So everybody says, what are you doing for Earth Day? I'm going to spend some time outside and enjoying the environment and Earth. I think, so here are my thoughts. I have a mixed feelings about Earth Day. It's wonderful that we do it. It is a day for us to stop and reflect about our role in protecting, you know, the planet. And I think regardless of your belief system, I mean, pretty much every belief system has this structure in it that says we are to be good stewards of the Earth, right? And so I do think it's a moment for us to stop, look around, think about what we value about the world around us, the environment around us, and think about what our role is in protecting that. And that's, recycling is great, and those kinds of individual activities are great, but they pale in comparison to the power that we have as a voter to actually make sure and press our leadership on taking real substantive action on protecting this environment that we love so much. But also, so a colleague of mine from the Aspen Institute he said this before, and he posted it again this morning, and I'm going to read this quote because I love it. And it says, if you only paid attention to your partner on their anniversary or your friend on their birthday, you aren't going to sustain that relationship for very long. That is wonderful. And so that is truthfully how I feel about Earth Day. Earth Day should be Earth Day every day. And it's wonderful that we have a day that we raise awareness about Earth Day and the need to protect our planet. But we also can't expect to sustain that relationship that we have with our environment and with Earth if we only pay attention to it one day.
So it would be nice, instead of hearing or reading some tweet that's, you know, hastily composed the night before Earth Day about how great the environment is, if Earth Day were more of a, say, reflection on what we've done to improve environment and sustainability over the last year.
And what are we doing to protect Earth that we say we love so much, that we've given it a whole day to celebrate it? What are we doing to protect it? And the truth is, not enough, not fast enough, and we have to continue to push, and we have to continue to talk about it.
Our guest is Ashley Ward from Duke's Nicholas Institute, and we're just about out of time. Is there anything you wanted to mention that we haven't gotten to yet?
No. I guess I should. We have a report coming out today that looks at how state hazard mitigation planners have incorporated heat into their state hazard mitigation plans. I want to give a big shout out to FEMA, who has decided to officially make heat a priority, which is wonderful, and has released, I think yesterday, guidance for states and how to incorporate heat. And our report is tended to be supplement to this guidance. And so I'm very excited to see where this goes. And recognizing heat as a hazard is a critical first step in mitigating these impacts.
Ashley, thanks for all the work you do, and I look forward to next time.
Thanks.